A five.
Five. Chris, the topic we will be discussing today is, how do you spotlight characters?
Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, we have appearances in the real world coming up that we needed to talk about. Both you and I are going to be at the AADL Game Con coming up in Ann Arbor on April 13th. We will be on a panel which is called GM Like a Pro. So I'm fascinated to hear what you have to say on that panel about GMing Like a Pro. Yeah, and then we'll be on that. That panel also has Phil Cameron, who's been on the podcast as well, on it. And he is actually a pro. So I think that'll be a pretty good conversation.
Should we specify that AADL is the Ann Arbor District yes. Library? Is that correct?
Yeah, we probably should. Yeah, that's a good specification.
Okay.
Yeah, so it'll be at the downtown branch. If you're in southeastern Michigan, the library out here does a really good job with events. So this one should be good. I'm pretty excited. Avery Alder, who has made the Quiet Year, among other games, will be there, and they're going to be doing a talk about politicizing and queering game dynamics, which I think just sounds absolutely fascinating. So I'm hopeful that I can get to that. And then there's a handful of other people who are like Roll for Topic adjacent. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, I think you'll see a lot of names. You can go ahead and check out everything on the website at the Ann Arbor District Library website. Andy, are you planning on being there the whole day? Are you just coming for the panel and heading out?
I'm not going to race in for the panel and then bail instantly, but yeah. I don't think I'll be there the whole day. So I'll stop in. I'd like to put in a few hours, get to one or two of these other events and say hi to some people.
Yeah. So there'll be some panels, and it looks like a bunch of game sessions as well too. Although I don't think they've announced quite yet who all is running what when, but yeah, I'm sure you can keep watching the website for that. But yeah, if you see us there and you recognize us either by our voices, or I guess you'd recognize us by our voices, please say hi. I'd love to meet people. Keep your criticisms light, I guess.
You cannot in the Q&A session, you cannot point out that we are not actually pro GMs.
Yes, yeah. I mean, go for it if you want to, but yeah. So I just wanted to mention that. So again, that's on April 13th. So we will see you there if you can make it. So Andy, you had mentioned that we wanted to do a little bit of follow-up from actually our last episode.
Indeed, yeah. So if you recall, Chris, our last episode, we asked the question of what, like, historical or otherwise significant person would you like to game with? A number of friends of the podcast and people in the Discord chimed in with their answers to this question. So I thought it would be fun to just read off some of the names that have been tossed out there. So I'm just going to start going down the list. Speak up if you have any comments or whatever. Yeah. So we have what I will put in the category of, people with really distinct voices. So Orson Welles, Alfred Hitchcock, two people I don't know, Matt Berry and Peter Sarah.
You don't know. Okay. They are like titans of British comedy.
Right? Okay.
So, Berry, you would probably know him from What We Do in the Shadows. He's in that show. Totally blanking on his character name, but he's fantastic in that. It's also been in a handful of other things too.
All right, that's awesome. I've just exposed myself as an uncultured adult.
Why are you not up on modern day British comedians?
I'm really more of like an Ernest Goes to Camp person like a classy British comedy person.
I did want to say on the Orson Welles point, I think that's a fantastic pick. Like Orson Welles and Hitchcock in particular, like I think you'd end up having an issue, I guess, of them just sort of monologuing quite a bit, which could be really good. I recently watched a little clip of Hitchcock giving a speech at like an award ceremony, and like that man like was masterful with the English language. I mean, you just like, you're listening to him talk and you're like, where is he going with this? But this is so enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, we didn't get into it in the episode. There is that sense that, it would be fun to play with someone who's like a great performer, right? In the way that some people really dig, the cast of Critical Role or other shows where they're bringing like actual acting talent to, a hobby that doesn't otherwise really require it. So, as you say, that can wind up sucking all the oxygen out of, you know, the other players, but it could also be really fun to sit at the table while someone's just going to town with their, their accent or their, you know, eloquent language. Yeah. Anyway, moving down this list, someone said the whole cast of Princess Bride, which is hard to argue with. Somebody else said Brindlewood Bay would be the perfect game to play with the Golden Girls.
So,
again, hard to hard to disagree there. And someone said the cast of Flash Gordon.
That's an interesting one.
I don't really know. I've never been like a Flash Gordon person.
Would you? I think I'd want them to be in costume. It's like from the movie.
What type of cast are we talking about? Like when we say Flash Gordon, what are you thinking? Are you thinking like, I don't know, you know, 1940s? Like, what is that type of performance? Like, how would you describe it?
Oh, I guess I am. I'm envisioning like, I guess it's the, I just looked this up. It's the 1980 Flash Gordon movie. Have you seen?
I've not seen it.
Can you picture this in your mind? So I believe this is the.
I cannot. No.
Yeah. Okay. Well, after we're done, you're going to Google this and see, and you're going to be like, how have I not watched this? It is a very, very silly movie. It is, I think, is Brian Blessed in this?
If Brian Blessed is in this, then obviously, yes.
Yeah, Brian Blessed is in it. I mean, it is just like over the top, like camp outfits and stuff like that. I think the person that mentioned playing with the cast of Flash Gordon, they said like doing a Star Trek RPG I think would be pretty great.
Okay,
yeah,
awesome.
Right, so I mean, just like imagine like cheesy campy like 80s sci-fi, but them trying to like play a, you know, a very very serious Star Trek RPG. Yeah,
that does sound good. Well, I'm stuck on Brian Blessed or Blessed, however you pronounce his name, but here's my weird niche piece of media that I'll go to my death defending, and that is Brian Blessed puts in a career defining role as Long John Silver in this impossible to get anymore 1980s sequel, Disney produced sequel show to Treasure Island. Like, it's just as niche as it gets. But holy, it's like this commanding performance. Just absolutely, absolutely blowing everybody else on the show out of the water. It's just a joy to watch. So
yeah,
I guess you probably just have to find it on YouTube somewhere.
But I'm sure you can find it there. Yeah.
And then we have one more name on the list here. Offered with no explanation, so I'm interested if you're where your mind goes with this. But someone said Alexander Dumas.
I mean, I think that would be also fantastic, right? I mean, like, have you read anything by Dumas?
Oh, not since high school, I don't think.
But yeah, I think that'd be fascinating. I mean, well, like, you know, sort of like, well, what language are you going to play this game in? But I mean, I think like, yeah, like that sort of author, right? That just sort of can like spend hundreds of pages talking about sort of anything, right? Like would be pretty great. I mean, it's almost like, going back to you said in the last episode, like, you know, playing with Stephen King, right? So it is sort of like, it would be fun. Find five authors that can write those like door stopper, you know, books and get them together and sort of see what happens. I mean, you probably would never make it out of the tavern, right? Like they would just be, luxuriating and everything.
I actually wanted to follow up a little bit on what we talked about with regards to Stephen King. And I realize this is a new episode and we aren't just supposed to rehash the old one, but with Stephen King, I was thinking after the episode, which is when I have all my really good insights, that, you know, the reason someone like Stephen King or another, like one of these storyteller names that came up in the discussion or in this list we just read, to me, the reason those people, person like Stephen King, what he would bring to the game table is not, it's not that he would come to the table with like a 10-page backstory for his character. Like, I mean, I've no doubt he could come up with a great backstory for his character, but that sounds boring to me. What I think a good storyteller who has a skill at fleshing out characters would bring is that they would make decisions in the game that really made sense based on this very three-dimensional character that they have like mapped out. So I don't know about you, but you know, I still to this day struggle when I do play a game to make choices that, you know, make sense for the character versus making choices that make sense as a move towards solving the game or completing the game successfully, right? And, you know, I try to avoid that. And there's a lot of different tricks that games do to kind of prompt you to make in-character or in-genre choices. But I think someone who has that real character-focused storytelling skill would be able to, like, get in the mind of this character, like, and make decisions that, like, I feel like you would always be saying, of course so-and-so chose to, whatever, you know, lock himself in the basement mm-hmm. at the first sign of danger. You know, it would just make sense because of what we know about the character. So there's my little addendum.
No, that's really good. And I mean, I think that gets at sort of the heart of what makes what sort of makes like someone fun to play with, right? Is their ability to take their character and like really embody the character, but then also make decisions that are not like 100% for, I don't know, like they're not optimized decisions, right?
Yeah.
Like I think like there's definitely a way to play games where you are just sort of trying to make the optimized decisions all the time. But I think like for me, every time I've had a moment at the table where I'm like, oh, this is really cool. It's when myself or someone else has made a decision that's like, oh, that's going to harm us actively, right? Like from getting towards our goal, right? But it also fits with your character really well. And it's like, oh, and then I think like that's where we like learn more about the stories that we're trying to tell.
I agree. And I think it goes even further beyond just remember to every now and then make a foolish decision, but more mm-hmm. like, what would your character in this moment consider the optimal action to take, you know? And, if they're very wrapped up in whatever their circumstance is or whatever their history is, or if they just aren't the sort of person that looks very far ahead, they might end up making a really foolish decision. But it's mm-hmm. one that makes sense. You know, it's not just like, haha, I'm going to inject some slapstick into the game, right?
Yeah. It's not like, there's always a good reason behind it. Cause I mean, I think like, right, that's sort of life, right? Like you find yourself making decisions that maybe you're surprised by later. Maybe it's only me, right? Like that you're just like, oh, like that was kind of interesting. Or like, why did I react that way? And hopefully you have a space to reflect on that in your life. But So, I mean, I think that's like the interesting part. Cause then otherwise then you're just sort of a bundle of mechanical numbers, right? Yeah, like you're just playing a numbers game. The other I did want to call out, because I think you missed it in the list of stuff. Kyle, in response to this, just posted a single frame from Pinky and the Brain of Brain from that show. So I don't know. You might have been a little bit too old to get into Pinky and the Brain.
I actually saw that and I couldn't tell if that was a character he was suggesting or some sort of like Gen Z like meme reaction to the conversation. So I was like,
Okay.
I mean, and I went on then to embarrass myself by not knowing those British comedians. So it's not like I have a lot of dignity left here, but I was attempting to preserve my dignity. Okay. So carry on. Tell us why is that Pinky or is that the Brain?
That is the Brain. Yeah.
Okay. Pinky is the Brain?
No, Pinky and the Brain. So there's two characters. Oh, this is fascinating. I'm going to have to explain this. '90s cartoon to you. Yeah, so there's the Brain, which is one of it's two mice. There's Pinky, who's kind of like a dumb buffoonish sort of character, and the Brain, who's this like ultra smart mouse. And so every night they try to come up with a plan to take over the world. Like that's
Brain's whole thing. I've heard that has soaked through into the general.
Yes, but I mean, famously, right? Like they always something goes wrong. Usually, Brain has overextended himself in some way or come up with a plan that like seems foolproof, but is actually like quite dumb. He blames Pinky for it, but it's often his fault, right?
Okay.
So it would be good. It would be fun to sort of pair that personality, I think, with maybe one of these like author types as well. Like you have like one person's like, this plan is perfect, like nothing could possibly go wrong, and then like the author types would be like, well, here's all the ways again.
And again, we can wrap up this chat here and move on to a real topic. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't really thought about cartoon characters as mm-hmm. possible nominations, and a whole bunch are, you know, the whole cast of The Simpsons, and you know, a whole bunch are jumping in there now. It would be pretty funny to see how that played out.
Yeah, it'd be fun to have like Wile E. Coyote. Okay, let's talk about our topic.
So our topic is the open-ended question of how do you spotlight players. So mm-hmm. I don't think that we have really talked about this, but I think this is a pretty big piece of being a good GM. So can I get your gut response to, like, what does it mean to spotlight someone?
Yeah, my gut reaction to this is this is when you've made a concerted effort to sort of pull something out of the narrative to where one particular player through their character can react to, like, the narrative that you're doing. And it's like, right, and that's like a long-winded way of saying, like, you're kind of focusing on one character, either for the whole session, for part of the campaign, or just for like a little moment at the table. A couple minutes or something like that, where you're like kind of specifically saying, like, let's kind of set everything aside and, like, we're just going to talk about, like, this character. Does that make sense to you, or do you have a different nuance to it?
It does make sense. It's not that I have a different nuance on it. It's that the idea of spotlighting characters, I think, it's not one I grew up with in, like, kind of the early decades of the hobby as much. Yeah. I'm not saying it's super new school, but it's a newer concept. This idea, I think, that there is, like, a coherent character-centered kind of narrative going on that calls for occasional attention being given to it. I think that's quite interesting. I was thinking of this more in the very logistical running the table sense of noticing when someone has been quiet for a really long time, or that other people have been kind of dominating the play conversation, and going out of your way as GM to somehow bring them into the game more fully, I guess.
I think that for me, that's definitely a part of it, right? Is when you notice that someone is maybe trying to find a way to, like, get into the conversation. You have, like, other dominant personalities, is being really specific about, like, let's stop all that, or you can keep having that conversation, but we're really going to kind of focus on this player for a minute, right? I think some people appreciate that, right? Like, being given that space to, like, where you're asking them a specific question, or, like, saying, like, what is your character doing in this scenario? And other times, right, when you're talking about those dominant personalities, like, they're going to do that no matter what. So it's sort of like, you know, like, let them go off, right? But, like, yeah, make sure that you're giving those times to, like, everybody else at the table.
I'm mostly GM when I'm playing, and I'm wondering if you could describe from an actual play experience you've had of your character being, of you or your character, if that's the same thing here in some sense, I guess, being spotlighted. But what can you give me an example?
Yeah, so we're the game that I'm playing in right now with Matt Wilson is The Enemy Within. And so, again, like, I know he's modified it quite a bit, like, so I'm not going to get into too many story details, but, like, he has told me he's making, like, kind of a specific effort to set each of the chapters sort of targeting one of our characters. So we have, like, there's chapters within the campaign, right? Yep. So, like, this last one that we just played was sort of, like, focused a bit on my character, right? My character, which meant that, like, plot points where I think they would be somewhat open-ended, right? He tried to relate them back to what was going on. Like, so my character is this seamstress character, this magical seamstress, which is super fun, named Nettle. And so she uses lots of, like, thread based magic and everything. So I think, okay, like, Matt tried to work that in. There was, like, a demon that we were fighting, right? That we were trying to stop a ritual of, and, like, that demon was using lots of, like, thread based magic as well. And, like, there were some other, like, little details in there. And so for me, like, I'm egotistical as everybody else, right? Like, it's nice for me to be like, oh, like, this is sort of, like, you know, this is sort of my time to shine, right? Like, I'm sure involved in this. Not that he was, like, you know, saying everybody else take a sideline, like, Chris and I are gonna play for for three sessions.
This just, you know, has more more impact for your character.
Yeah.
And it, you know, did your GM talk to you about what that might look like?
He mentioned it to me, right? Like, we're friends, so it's not like this was, like, a big, like, sit down conversation. He just mentioned it casually, right? And so I think, like, knowing that was for me helpful to, like, to know that, like, oh, like, maybe some of these plot beats are going to be coming at me a little harder or a little bit more directly than they otherwise might have, just because that's sort of the focus of this. And I think for me, whenever I'm playing, like, having those moments happen, like, does draw me back into the story where, right, like, I mean, it's like anything, right? Like, your interest might sort of ebb and flow within a session, But like knowing that you're being asked directly to like contribute or like do something, that's part of it. I mean, I think that like definitely draws you in, right? And like especially the sorts of games that I play tend to be more collaborative narratively. Having the ability to sort of step in and like, yeah, have a bit of that back and forth or like provide some nuance and stuff like that. So it's not just like, you know, the GM is telling me everything that's happening, right? And like making all those decisions and stuff. So
have you ever been in a game where the spotlighting was more planned out than that? Has a GM ever talked to you and been like, you know, what scenes do you want to be sure take place around your character, or what do you want? What do you want me to set up for you? Mm. You know, have you been in a game where that kind of conversation took place?
Yeah. So years ago we played a 7C game, and 7C has sort of an explicit mechanic for that. We would sort of be picking the next story beats that we wanted to happen and like stating really clearly, like, here's sort of the next part of my story, and we'll sort of see how that ends up happening at the table. So everybody had those, right? So like he was kind of constantly like those things were happening happening as we went around, like, and that was pretty interesting to me, like, because it allowed you to have a sense of character progression that was pretty explicit, right? So you could define, hey, I want this to be a 5-step story that I'm going to tell over the course of the campaign, and like I want my character to, I don't know, grow up in some way, or like learn to be an expert sword fighter, like that. And so if you want that to happen, it's like, well, if I'm going to be an expert sword fighter, I want, like, I'm going to have to like get a cool sword, you know, take down some sort of like local sword fighter, like train with this sword master, you know, like beat the like big bad with my sword fighting skills, right? So you have these like story beats in there, and it's like they're vague enough that they can kind of slot them in anywhere, but like, I mean, over the course of like a campaign, that could be really cool to sort of see that happening. But like, I mean, you can imagine if you have 5 characters that each have these like 5 spotlighted moments that they want, like there's your campaign right there. It's like, yeah.
It's interesting to me that so many games encourage or invite you to chart out your character's kind of mechanical future. You know, you can go online and what's the best leveling guide or, you know, build guide for my Pathfinder Ranger or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting that we have that framework that we're encouraged to kind of plan ahead on, but there's not generally a corresponding, like, what are the character growth beats or the like personal story beats that you want to, or like milestones you want to hit?
Yeah. 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 I think it's definitely different. It, in some ways it feels, I don't know, like I don't like min-maxing just as a general thing. Like it's not something that like does it for me. I understand that for some people it's great, right? But like, yeah, for me, the thought of like, oh, like what if we can, like, it's the, yeah, like what if we could have all these disparate things that we want to happen with our story that we're telling, and like, let's see how we can sort of fit them together. Like, that's a fun puzzle to me. Like, I would like min-maxing that sort of thing. Yeah, but way less so. Like, I got to make sure that by level 5, I have enough whatever points to get this spell, you know. It's like, what about you, like running games, I guess, do you have any examples of like when you have spotlighted a character, I mean, or like, yeah, or tried to really draw upon like a character's backstory to make something happen?
Not really in the same way that we've been talking about exactly. Generally my spotlighting has been kind of more spur of the moment. Like I didn't plan this scene because I, you know, knew it would have particular resonance for player B, or because I wanted to, like, you know, set the ball or whatever the, is that volleyball where you, what's,
yeah,
you, where you set it for someone else to hit it or something. Yeah.
Yeah. You bump and then you set it and then someone spikes it. This is what I'm told. I've never successfully done that.
right. I don't know that I've ever worked very hard to make such a planned scene take place, but what I, you know, what I do is try to watch in the moment who here is most affected by this, who here has some sort of extra vested interest in what's going on that maybe the others don't. And I'll try to call them out. But, you know, I would say I'm very intrigued at the idea of pushing that a little further, particularly because, you know, running a, you know, Band of Blades game. And as you know, these like Forged in the Dark games kind of rely a lot on the conversation between the GM and character and players about what the trajectory of their character is going to be. So I don't know, I guess I'm I'm pretty interested. It's not something that I've generally done a whole ton. Is that?
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's funny you say that, because I think like a game like Band of Blades is almost like minute to minute, just a series of spotlighting, right? Yep. Like, yeah, because you're each time that you pick up the dice to roll, like there's a lot going into that conversation about just even like your position and your effect and those sorts of things. And it is going to be very much related back to the character and what they have on them and their abilities and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
That is a good way to put it. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right. You inevitably spotlight people in that, where everyone's scrounging through their character sheets to see who can spend some stress to mm-hmm. do this, or who has a point of armor they can contribute or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, now that I'm thinking about it, playing, you know, Blades in the Dark or, you know, those sorts of games versus playing D&D, I think that I could describe my fellow, or like, you know, as a GM or as a player, I could describe everybody else's at the table. I could describe their characters really well in those games. But like with D&D, I don't know if I could describe too many other characters really well that I've played mm-hmm. with or had played. I'm getting around to this idea that maybe it's the mechanics that help us make these spotlighting decisions as well. Like, otherwise, I think, like, not that you're fighting against D&D or Pathfinder or whatever to have these spotlight moments, but it's just like, it's not as much part of the conversation when you're really just sort of focused on like, okay, well, roll the hit, right? Yeah. Like, did that hit? You know, like, we're just sort of looking at a number versus like, okay, like in Blades in the Dark, like, how are you trying to hit them? And like, you know, like, what's going on with the situation and what's going on with you and all that, like, feeds into it.
Floating in the back of my mind, searching for a way to connect to this topic, has been this idea I've been exposed to in like a corporate career context of, well, you know how there are books and, you know, essays and stuff that sort of chart out the plot of a movie, like the plot mm-hmm. beats of like an archetypal movie or something like that.
Yeah.
My last two jobs, my employer has invested in like basically a corporate marketing version of that, where mm-hmm. I forget what the name of it is. It's like Story Maps or
Story Brand, I think.
Story Brand. And I don't want to get into, I'm trying to keep snark out of my voice here.
This is a snark-free zone, yeah.
Because I'm not casting judgment on whether your business uses like StoryBrand or something to chart out a marketing thing. But it was an instructive experience when going through the exercise where you are like mapping out this like basically plot line for like your character, or in this case, like a product or something like that.
Yeah.
And like, when I think of, when would you shine the spotlight on someone? If you imagine like the hero's journey through a typical movie, you know, they have their starting point, and then they maybe have a moment of crisis that introduces them to a larger world or threat or context. And then they have an encounter with like a guide or a mentor who sort of challenges them or sets them on the path. And then they have a setback that puts mm-hmm. them back to the beginning. Yeah. And then they have a moment of overcoming that setback and then rallying. It really is true that like every like major blockbuster piece of entertainment you've watched like follows these.
Yes. Yeah.
But like, those are all like nodes in a character's journey that seems to me would be the perfect place to like shine the spotlight on you and make sure you really ring all of the narrative like depth and fun out of those nodes, those like steps in your journey. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of this, of you have five players, and they're all five players with characters that are all kind of going through their own version of that journey. And I wonder if you could, as the GM, you could, you know, you don't want to define too much, but you could put some thought into like, okay, so character one, this is who they are. You know, what's it going to look like when they face their first big setback, or when they have their big moment of growing up and, you know, overcoming their flaw or something like that. And just being ready to shine the spotlight to kind of empower those, like those scenes. I don't know. Yeah. Is this, any of this making sense, or is this just gibberish?
No, I think that's making sense. Yeah, it is. I think it takes a bit more care than I think most of us spend during our prep time to think about that. I think like when you think about prep, it's often along the lines of like, what cool things can happen in the world, or like, you know, like what's happening with the villain, and like, yeah, how many shops does this town have, like those sorts of things. But like what you're talking about is a lot more like, okay, everybody give me your character sheets and I'm going to map out like, yeah, here's like a handful of things that I want to see your character react to. Almost like, yeah, like what's going to happen when that setback happens for you. And I think as a GM, you shouldn't have a conclusion on what that's going to be. Like, I think that's what you have to leave up to the player. But I mean, for sure, engineer the setback to happen, and yeah, so they can have that moment. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really cool. Like, that would be a really fun game to play in. I think it would be a harder game to play in. Again, like going back to the conversation we've been having sort of recently about like challenging games, I think that would be a challenging game to prep, but then also to play in. But I think it would be a very rewarding game to have those sorts of things presented to you.
Yeah. On the flip side, I think spotlighting to me also, I do think there's a lot of value in seizing just like unplanned moments in a game to just shine a light on someone. And I think you can do this we often talk about pausing and saying, whatever, you see a mountain in the distance. Tell me, let's take a quick second here, what your character is thinking or what memory does it evoke? You know, like those things, in addition to being good, just general little tricks you can use to make the game feel more grounded and interesting. I mean, they are a chance to invite people to step into the spotlight if they want to, right? Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. That is the first time in this conversation, like the invitation to step into the spotlight. Like I haven't, right. Games are just like, it's a series of invitations, right? Like you're trying to get people to sort of interact with the space a bit, right? And to just like sit down and play pretend with your friends too. But like, yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty key thing, and maybe leave on. It's just like shining the spotlight is one thing, but like it's an invitation for a character to step into that. It's not like a demand necessarily, right? Because like I think it's okay to be like, I don't really want to go into depth on that, or like I don't, yeah, right, like yeah, thank you for the opportunity, but I'm really just here because I want to roll the hit and like roll damage. Yeah.
Okay, well, we should wrap up. I think we've hit or passed our time, so
yes. Yeah, cool. Well, that was a good conversation.
Yeah. Do you remember who nominated that question? Because that was a good one.
I do not.
Okay, well, if you recognize that question, thanks, and our apologies for noting down who suggested it. So
yes, yeah, so thank you. I mean, as always, we are happy to take suggestions for other topics to add to the table, so please reach out if you have any ideas there. So I think that does it for us. We've been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show with the Splat Book with John Corey and Kyle Latino is great. They wrapped up an actual play of the Lord of the Rings 5th edition that I'm still listening to, which is really good. And then they took a little bit of a break, but I think they're back in action coming up soon. So by the time you listen to this one, there should be a new episode the following week.
I haven't listened to that actual play yet, but it sounds really awesome.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao, and I'm glad we're doing the last names again, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's good.
That was a weird moment in our podcast.
I mean, I've been thinking about that for the past 2 weeks, so it's we're back.
Okay. Baby. Awesome. Well, great conversation, Chris. Why don't you sign us out?
Oh, yes. And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.